Welcome to Look Behind the Look, the celebrated podcast that explores your favorite looks in film, television, and fashion history. Through conversations with the fashion world's elite and award-winning hair, makeup, and costume designers on sets around the world, you will see and hear exciting tales from behind the scenes, career origin stories, and tons of advice and tips. I'm your host, Tiffany Bartok. Hey everybody, welcome to Look Behind the Look. This week's episode is about Scream 6. Not one, not two, three, four, five, but six. Have you seen it yet? If you see this film, please, please, please see it in a theater. It's really the only way that it's allowed to be seen. I will not allow any other way for it to be seen. It's so good. It's so fun. Go with your friends. Relive all the nostalgia. And speaking of which, we are talking today with costume designer Avery Pluis, who had the extreme challenge of honoring the legacy that is Scream 6 with all of the history, all of the fandom, all of the scrutiny that comes along with taking on a job like this and taking part in creating the Scream Museum that's in the film. Everything was taken into consideration down to the very last detail. There's tons of Easter eggs in this movie. I'm sure you've spotted them all if you're a real fan. But it's fun to really go down the rabbit hole and discover all of the treats that are in this film. And Avery's here to talk to me about a few of them. So let's take a listen.
I had this secret. There's a darkness inside of me. It followed me here. And it's gonna keep coming for us. We share a certain history. This isn't like any other ghost face.
What is this place?
A shrine.
We've got to lure him in.
We execute him.
Hi, Avery. We are here to talk about Scream 6. I'm so in awe of how many there are.
I know, right?
I just saw it the other night and it was so good. I know it's getting great reviews and you must just be so happy because it can go wrong and it did not.
Yeah.
Right? A lot at stake. Like, can you talk a little bit to me about like the pressure of entering a franchise like this?
Oh, for sure. I think I had kind of an idea when I agreed to it. And then when I got to Montreal and it like really hit me, I was like, cool, this is terrifying.
What made it hit you? Like, what did you realize?
I think when I realized the significance of the museum component that we had to make and also the new mask, I was like, you guys have really, you've really given me some big tasks to show what I'm made of. And I think also understanding the fan base more, like I knew going into it that there are a lot of very passionate Scream fans, but I don't, when I started researching the museum and seeing how much information is actually out there about every little tiny detail, I was like, oh, these people know everything. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, cool, there's no tricking them. Because often, you know, in a production meeting or on a project, it'll be like, oh, just throw this black t-shirt in instead of this one because the way we're shooting it, it'll look like XYZ and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, there is no way around that with this fan base. Like, you will, even if we could get away with it, they will find out.
Because what? They'll like pinch it and look.
They'll zoom in. Or they'll find somehow set photos and... You know, when you're dealing with a legacy this large with people who love it so much, you want to honor them. And
yes,
I felt like I owed them a certain level of respect, like the loyalty that they have to this franchise. So
for sure,
that was definitely daunting. And, you know, I think my team, I'd never worked with them before. And at the beginning, they were all kind of like, okay, this is like, you're intense about this stuff. Because I was like, nope, like that fabric, nope. For the robes we recreated, like I think we went through like something like 30 rounds of samples. And there is a little bit of information on it online, but it, but yeah, I was definitely particular, but I think it shows.
Absolutely.
You can't really tell when you look at the museum that it's all reproductions. So.
Okay. It was okay. In yeah, the end. Okay.
The only quote unquote real pieces in there are from five because it was so recent.
Mm-hmm.
And then we did find some of the original pieces on Etsy and
no.
eBay. Not that was in the film, but okay. Like, yeah, I would. Can you
got it. Oh my God. Some guy is like sitting there going, I have it.
Also, with it, we definitely could not have afforded that.
Right.
But we found, like, I had one assistant who just dealt with the museum and researching the pieces and finding similar things. And she found a lot of great images from past auctions and, you know, Emma Roberts' plaid shirt is actually children's Abercrombie and Fitch.
Weirdly. Wow.
So we found the children's Abercrombie and Fitch plaid shirt.
Okay.
We found the exact, I think they're like Reagan Bone cargo pants, if I remember correctly. Okay. I could be wrong. Maybe the boots are.
Reagan Bone.
Anyways, we found a lot of the original brand items, and then there were some reproductions that we like Tatum's shirt. That was a huge challenge. We found a sweater at a rental house that was the same texture, a men's sweater, and we bought it from them, and then we dyed it the color it was and then recut it. So there was a lot of that.
Okay. Oh my God. And so did you have to watch all of the movies repeatedly?
Yeah, I had already obviously seen them all, but I have an amazing picture of one of my assistants. She just has like a I think it's actually the Scream cloak she has over her head, and it's over the lap, over her laptop. So she can see, because a lot of them, we also couldn't take screenshots from the films because if you watch them using a streaming service, it won't let you.
I noticed that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. On so some streamers. Mm-hmm.
That was not helpful. Right. And again, so it, the fan base was like, we had this incredible encyclopedia because everyone's so involved
yeah.
in the history of it that I was like, man, I would be screwed without these people. So I was very grateful for all of their research they'd done, basically.
Oh my God. Yes. Yeah. What a fun world. How long were you in this world? How long were you researching and then shooting? What did it come to?
I had 6 weeks of prep. The museum we did have a bit of time with, but we also had the subway. So I had, you know, at the beginning we were researching just the museum, and the museum is technically art department, but they needed costumes. So we got to a point where we were like this is a full-time job just doing. Yeah. So we ended up hiring an assistant just for the museum named Miriam, who is incredible. And so she worked with our department. She found everything. She and I approved everything. And you know, if there was something that was like the Tatum shirt, there were like many iterations of options. And I was like, nope, not good enough. Like can't mess up the Tatum shirt. So
you held them together in a screenshot, or
and just looking at stills of the texture of the shirt. So she took that on full time, and that we realized that was going to be a full time job. So
yeah. And then tell me how the art department, because I can't think of a situation where it would be more married with the costumes and the art. Bless you.
Sorry. I'm muted.
I mean, it really is like totally entwined.
Yeah. It was funny because usually all the costume approvals go through me and then through the directors, but Michelle, our production designer, everything we did, you know, she'd come and look at the breakdown of it. And if she wanted it aged more, we would go further. So it was interesting working with the production designer to that degree.
Yes, because you had to age everything so meticulously because the first one was, what, how many years? Are we talking 30 years? Is it 30?
25?
Oh my God. Oh, it's so old. I know. I just recently rewatched them all with my son and it was so fun. I was like, you don't understand what this did to our world, you know? And he was just like, oh my God, he loves them. But so for the first one, so that's where the aging of the mask came in because that's from the first one. Talk to me about the masks.
Yeah. So, where do I begin with the mask?
I know, right? Because also I don't want to, I usually say there's going to be spoilers, but it's so recently out that I don't want to spoil anything.
It was scripted. And it really scared me because again, the fan base is so passionate.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to let anyone down and I wanted it to really be cool. So
yes, that's really like an asset to have that, you know, to experience that pressure and really embrace why you're feeling it and work through it. You know, that makes for a job well done.
Yeah. You know, in a way it kind of felt like I was like the Scream, I was like the stepmom to Scream fans.
Wow.
Like marrying.
That's a good way to describe it.
Like marrying their dad or something. I don't know how to, it felt like I was like, I just want everyone to accept me.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean?
I want to do right by you. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to mess up what you got going on here. I'm just like here to make things better or not better, but like, you know.
Yeah.
It definitely scared me. And then I just was like, you know, I had like a day of like being like an existential crisis. And then I was like, okay, well, get over it. You got to do it. So figure it out.
Wow. Yeah.
So I looked at a lot of images of broken dolls.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Well, I thought a lot about like faces and cracked faces that are scary. And my grandmother actually had a very extensive collection of porcelain dolls when I was
little.
And she also used to give them to me. And I liked them, but like didn't really care for them. And I would often at her house, she had this one room and it was just like covered.
The doll room. Yes.
I was like, man, that used to like just terrorize me sometimes, the older dolls. And so I was like, well, maybe like take a look. And also some non-porcelain dolls that are silicone, when I was looking at imagery, the plastic would raise around the eyes. And it was very, very creepy. So I started looking at that and then how can we recreate that texture? How can we... how can we create this world? And I had an amazing ager dyer named Val, and I worked very closely with her to develop the texture, the color, everything. And she was fabulous, and we had a gajillion of those masks that we worked through to develop the exact thing. We camera tested it.
And what material is the mask?
Kind of like a silicone.
Okay.
It's very malleable. And that was one thing that I was like, when it was written in, I was like, I don't actually think that this texture would crack.
Yeah.
And of course I always approach things from like the most technical level. So I was like, this wouldn't actually work, but it's like, it's a Hollywood movie. So like, that doesn't really always matter. And it's the goal and purpose in this matter is not logic, but what will kind of terrorize people the most. Right. So
I love that. Yes.
So I think we accomplished a creepy mask. I hope.
Yeah. So. Definitely. That scene in the bodega was, I was like watching it like this.
I know.
Tell me about the subway scenes, because those were epic. They were incredible. How long were you working on this? You filmed all of this in New York? No, Montreal.
Montreal.
Okay.
Michelle built that subway.
Like, oh my God.
She's insanely tall. Like, yeah. I loved that. I would joke a lot in production that the museum is Michelle's love child. The subway was my love child. Like, okay. It was, for me, the subway is like the climax of the costume component of the movie. It's like the tension of the movie comes to a head after the subway.
Right.
But yeah, I started planning that right away. Also, okay. Halloween is my favorite holiday ever, whether someone thinks it's a holiday or not. I consider it very much so.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Creative people's Christmas, for sure.
For sure.
Yes.
Since I was little.
Yes.
And so I was like, this is my dream come true. We can do a Halloween costume of this and this and this. And there were so many instances where the financial powers that be were like, you gotta calm down. Like, you have too many ideas. And
do you have to license the costume, like the It costume? Do you have to license that or?
Not that I'm aware of. I know there were, like, we had a lot of legal discussions, but I think you can use things, quote unquote, as intended. I think it's the props that are usually the
Got it.
But yeah, so I started prepping the subway as soon as I started prep, and selfishly because I cared about it so much.
Yeah.
I also just like loved it, like weekends, nights. Like, I was just like, you know, you get into the industry because you love certain parts of it, but you don't always get to experience the parts of the industry that you love on every project.
Right.
And the Halloween component for me, and it's also like paying homage to so many of the costume designers that have come before me, and paying my respects in a lot of ways. So we definitely, like, we started with, okay, what do you want to see on the subway? What original horror movies do you want to reference? What has been referenced in previous Scream films that are Easter egg, like Shaun of the Dead, Kirby watches in 4, so he's on Mindy's subway.
Oh, I love it.
A lot of that stuff. And then who are New York icons that people in New York would probably dress up as? What current films are out that we would want to reference or pay homage to? Not on the subway, but we have a Wednesday somewhere in the movie. We didn't realize what a massive hit it would be for Jenna, but we have a Wednesday. And then also some, like, you know, Scream is also it's not just a horror film. It's also really about being a cinephile and love of movies. So we've got a Spike Lee, not on the subway, but like there's little nods to cinema everywhere in the film too. So
I love that. Yeah. Then how long did you shoot the subway?
It was 3 days, if I remember.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh,
amazing. Now when, I was going to ask you something. It was about Scream. The cloaks. So now the cloaks, mm-hmm. Am I crazy or were these more fluid? Like, I just feel like it was like the cloaks were like a different material this time.
This one?
Yeah.
They're the same material as in 5.
Yeah. Okay. But they seem to be heavier until 5, and then they are more mobile.
Yeah.
And I thought I was losing my mind.
It's like a Lurex in 1 through 4.
Oh, okay. So that'd be heavier, right?
It's like drapier, kind of. Like it's a knit, and this one is a woven.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
And it has, so in 1 through 4, the glitter that's in it, not a lot of people, unless you're a huge Scream fan, realize there's glitter in it.
Like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah, it was.
And what does that do?
So on camera, often the color black, especially velvet, if you ever shoot with black velvet, it creates just like a black void.
For sure.
Like kind of an emptiness. And so the glitter was their way of creating dimension on camera where you could actually see the texture of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it reflects.
Yeah. And the directors really loved what Emily Gunshore, who did 5, did with theirs. So they wanted to maintain that. Also, it's many years later, so like obviously fabrics would have changed and developed, so we used the same fabric, and then she had used glitter spray on it. So there's the fabric sprayed in glitter.
Very cool.
Yeah,
that must be a mess. I just, anytime someone says glitter, I just feel instantly sorry for them.
Yeah. But it looks good. And it's a little more subtle. The thing too about the fabric that they used through 1 through 4 versus now, the technology of cameras has really changed. And so it looks so much more glittery than it did back in the day. And so that's, I think, part of the reason they went in that direction.
Right. And then as far as the other big question I had as I was watching was, as far as the everyday clothing on everybody, like, here was my question. Is it a nod to the 90s, or are we just there right now as contemporary fashion? I was like, I think this is contemporary, but it looks retro to me because I'm that old.
I mean, I always try to go a bit timeless, or like, not to feel too on the nose of where we are now, because I think it's more dated,
like, yeah.
3 years from now. But no, there were a lot. It was funny. There were a lot of moments in Montreal too, where I was like, I wore that outfit when I was 14. I was like, exactly. Oh, I guess I'm old now.
I know. I was like, where is my skinny strap tank? Where is it?
Yeah.
And then Gail, for the first time, looked really like modern. I mean, you know, usually she looks kind of like a spoof of herself and everything, and that was always like the joke, but she just really looked hot this time. I wondered if she had like a different approach, or if that's just, she's just that mature and grown into herself as a character now, and she's a big success, and like, she's with it now. You know, I wondered if there was, what you were thinking when you conceived of Gail's character this year.
Well, she's moved to New York, right? Mm-hmm. She lives there now. And so she's...
That apartment. My God.
I know, right?
Incredible.
I knew it was beautiful when I saw it in real life, but just on camera, I was like, Michelle, you did a beautiful job.
Gorgeous.
But yeah, Courtney definitely has... she knows Gail better than anyone, right? She's been literally doing it the longest out of anyone that was on our set in terms of Scream. So it's like, she's the Gail expert. So I really leaned into her thoughts and emotions about Gail. To her, Gail is bright, sort of vibrant colors. I mean, I feel very complimented. You think that she looks so great.
I did. Yeah. Huge Gail fan. I mean, oh my God, she did such a great job in this movie too. I was like,
I mean, she's fabulous in it.
Get her a Marvel film, please.
Right?
Like, the action. I know.
I was so like, impressed. My Lord, lady. And she did most of her own stunts.
No. Like, I was like, wow.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Or I think a lot of them. I remember seeing her like rolling around on the, like, doing all of that. And I was like, like, so impressed. But she's just like, and she's also hilarious. Like, she's great. But I think I also was like, I'm very much someone who grabs life by the lapels when I have a challenge. And I was like, I'm going to make the best Gale Weathers I possibly can. I mean, that was everyone. But with Gale, I was like, she's an iconic character.
Yeah.
And I was like, you cannot mess up Gale Weathers.
No, I mean, when she came on the screen, I was at a super boisterous screening, you know, and I love that. And like, thank God we're all back in the theaters, because watching this at home would be such a bummer for anybody. Yeah. Everybody was so responsive and cheering when she came on the screen, and all of her action scenes, they were just screaming, and it was great. I mean, it was such a vibrant audience. So that is the only way to see this movie, people, in the theater, for sure.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
I do want to ask you, though, how you got into this whole world. How did you begin working in costumes?
Very by chance. I was, I wanted to be a fashion designer. And it was at the time that I was sort of trying to break into that industry, was the recession in 2008, like kind of that time period. And just no one was hiring. And I was working at a boutique in Toronto, and the woman who did our alterations for clients was a seamstress in film. And, you know, we were always kind of chatting. She's like, you should really try it. Like, you should try this, blah, 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 blah. And I really was like not interested, because it just didn't sound, well, A, it was not what I thought I wanted to do. And it did.
Right. So different.
It just didn't sound appealing to me.
Sure.
But I literally nothing's working right now. So, so I just decided to try and be open. And I remember my first day on set, just as like a costume assistant. And I was like, oh, this is fun.
Yeah.
It's a grind, but like, this is really cool. And I'm someone who really loves to collaborate with others. Mm-hmm. And I realized that it wasn't as insular as fashion.
Like, right.
You have to work with a script coordinator. You have to work with set deck. You have to work with a production designer. You have to, obviously, the directors, the producers, the actors. It's such an ecosystem.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this is like so much more interesting. And then I just kept costume assisting. There wasn't a lot of work when I first started. And then I ended up working on the show Suits, just as a costume assistant.
Right, because Montreal, right.
No, that was Toronto.
Oh, really? Yeah, oh, my God. Yeah, so you went all the way. Okay, so. I went to
Montreal to do Scream, but I'm.
Got it. Got it. Okay.
And then I ended up working as a costume buyer on that. And working, I realized that in costume, you can still have a lot of fun with beautiful clothing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the odd time, you can still design, like you can still build stuff. It's there are not as many shows that you can do that so much anymore, but you know.
What stops that from being like time or?
Well, contemporary television.
Okay.
Like, or contemporary film, right? It's like,
right.
You're not going to design a t-shirt for.
Yeah. Yeah.
Something. Yeah. But you know, we are seeing, I think, a bit of a renaissance in TV now, where there are more and more shows where you can build stuff and whatnot. Yeah. But I kind of had this like aha moment on Suits, where I was like, oh, okay. So I can play with really beautiful clothing if there's like a wedding scene or a gala. I could probably design a gown for someone, and I would get that sort of that creativity out of myself. And then I can also, and then if I do a period project, I can kind of design most things, not everything, because you know, you have extras, and it's very rare that you, in a project like that, you can design every single costume. But I realized that I could be creatively fulfilled in what I was seeking out as a fashion designer, but I could also have a different level of stability. I mean, it's not a very stable industry in a lot of regards, but it Also, I love how no project is the same. Yeah. And I always become informed on a new area or new subject while I'm working on it. I'm very much a person who seeks out knowledge and understanding of different things, and film really forces me to do that. So yeah, and now I'm here.
Yay.
Oh, it started. Yeah.
And do you have any advice for people who want to get into this industry?
Yeah, I think, you know, you have to be really tough and resilient. It can be really hard.
What's the hardest part for you?
I think, you know, a lot of projects have a lot of asks from different people. Like, you have to please a lot of different people. Like, yes. You have to please the directors, you have to please the actors, you have to please the producers, the studio. You need to be able to find the garments for the vision that you have, or be able to make them in time, or secure the fabric if you have multiples. I mean, in COVID, just doing Scream, getting all of the multiples we needed of, like,
yeah,
you can have an outfit you want to put on camera, no problem, great, that's beautiful, but it's like, can I actually multiply it for the time? So yeah, I think unfortunately you have to be a bit tough. But I also think having a softness and a empathy and humility makes you really good as a filmmaker. Because ultimately we're telling stories to try to understand the world better. And I think, just, you know, someone said to me one of my first days on set, be a sponge, just soak everything you see in and observe. And I think a lot of times people just starting out want to prove how much they know, so they feel
totally
validated in taking up the space they are.
Yes.
And I think that that's always it's not the right approach, because the greatest people that I've learned from, who are like incredible at their work, are the most humble people, who think they, in a way, kind of know nothing and are students of life and students of the industry. And so I think if you can just have that you have to be, it's such a juxtaposition of,
yeah,
like, confidence, but you have to be humble. I think finding that balance, and then also get a therapist. If you work in film, you have got to have a therapist, for real. Like,
100%.
Yeah. But I don't know if any of that's good advice, but I would
say, yes, it's great advice. You know, it's funny that you should say that about the sponge today, because I was watching Survivor last night for some reason, just in the background. And this guy is like a rocket scientist on the show. You know what I mean? And he's like, he must be going far, because they've spent a lot on his EPK. You know what I mean? Like, he must be like worth their money.
They've invested in him.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they keep showing him like standing in front of NASA. And he's like, well, I am he's a sweet, cute little nerd. And he's like, I am a rocket scientist, but I don't want them to know that, because then they're going to depend on me for this and that. And so he's choosing when to sort of say, like, oh, I can solve puzzles, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like such a great strategy. And I'm predicting that he is going to go very far. But you're right. People want to show their worth, and they're just like in the makeup world, they just slap all this makeup on everybody. And it's like, sometimes you just need to like take care of the discoloration and leave, you know? Yeah.
I think also it's, you know, one of those things where, how do I say this? I think also the more successful people I'm around, like even just working with Radio Silence, they're so humble. And, you know, I think something that I've also experienced, just, I'm quite young for a costume designer. I also have a lot of people who underestimate what I'm able to do and kind of dismiss what I do, because I also look younger than I am, and I'm very much like, watch me. Like, okay, sure, underestimate.
I love that.
Go for it, you know? Yep. Mm-hmm. Great. Happy you have very little expectations of me.
Yes. Because
you're about to be proved very wrong.
I love that.
So I think, you know, being as humble as possible and then confident in the right moments. And when you're confident in the right moments, when you're humble, people listen to you more.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that's 100% true.
Yeah.
Well, I am very excited to see everybody's reactions to Scream 6. And I'm so happy to talk to you, Avery. Thank you so much for talking to me today. Yes. Until next time.
Look Behind the Look is a Vinyl Foot production, written by me, your host, Tiffany Bartok. Produced by Jace Bartok, edited by Evan Rivard. If you're interested in learning more, find our video version on the YouTube channel, Look Behind the Look Podcast. There you can see rare photos and clips from our guests. And please follow us on Twitter at LookBehindPod and Instagram at LookBehindTheLook. If you like the show, please rate, review, and subscribe. And tell your friends and spread the word. You can subscribe to us on iTunes or any podcatcher of your choice. Thanks for listening to Look Behind the Look.